Welcome, curious minds, to the deep dive. Have you ever stopped to really consider what keeps the millions of cars, trucks, motorcycles on European roads actually running?
It's easy to just focus on the new car sales figures, isn't it? Those shiny numbers.
Exactly. But even when those sales hit a bump, the constant hum of vehicle maintenance, that never really stops. And behind every single garage repair, every part replacement, there's this hidden giant, an essential piece of the puzzle most people never even think about.
The backbone, really.
Today, we're pulling back the curtain on one of those giants, Intercars SA. They trade on the Warsaw Stock Exchange, ticker Carbor War.
Right.
And this isn't just a deep dive into like nuts and bolts. It's about unpacking the engine, if you will, of Europe's massive automotive aftermarket.
A really crucial sector.
Our mission here is to take a comprehensive investment research analysis and, well, cut through the complexity. We want to reveal the core insights about Intercar's business model, the industry dynamics, its financial health, and what its future might look like.
Yeah, to really get under the hood.
The goal is for you, our listener, to walk away feeling genuinely well-informed about this vital yet often overlooked part of the automotive world.
There's a lot more to it than meets the eye.
By the end of this, you'll have picked up some surprising facts, a clear understanding of what drives this market, and I think a really valuable perspective on the opportunities and challenges facing a company that's literally keeping Europe's wheels turning.
It's a fascinating case study.
Okay, let's unpack this then. Who exactly is Intercars SA? And why should we be looking at a company that basically distributes car parts? It sounds, I don't know, simple on the surface.
Well, simple is probably the last word I'd use. Intercars. It's a company founded back in 1990 in Warsaw, Poland, and they've quietly grown into a real
The
powerhouse.
powerhouse. Okay. How big are we talking?
We're talking the largest importer and distributor of automotive spare parts in all of Central and Eastern Europe, the CEE region.
Wow, largest in CEE.
And get this, they're the second largest independent aftermarket distributor in all of Europe, and even one of the top players globally in their segment.
Second largest in Europe. Okay, so not simple at all.
Definitely not. Their listing on the Warsaw Stock Exchange, Carbor, just underlines that scale. So, yeah, they deal in individual parts, but the operation, it's anything but small.
So what's their secret sauce then? What makes them so pivotal?
It really comes down to their role in the value chain. Think of them as this essential bridge, almost like the central nervous system for the independent repair market.
A bridge between who?
On one side, you've got maybe 500 global parts manufacturers, big names, right? Bosch, Continental, ZF, people like that, highly concentrated.
Okay, the big suppliers.
Then on the other side, you have this incredibly fragmented customer base. Over 100,000 independent repair shops scattered all across Europe. Little garages, medium-sized
You're
workshops.
right, tens of thousands of small businesses.
Now, imagine being one of those small garages, trying to deal directly with hundreds of global suppliers, different ordering systems, minimum order quantities, logistics. It'd be a complete nightmare.
Not impossible, basically.
Exactly. It's just not economical or practical. And that's where Intercars steps in. They provide these crucial value-added functions.
Like what specifically?
First, supply aggregation. They consolidate this absolutely vast product range. We're talking over 5 million unique Sapios stock keeping units.
5 million. Seriously?
5 million. So a workshop can get almost any part of there. They need a tiny sensor, a whole engine from one single reliable source. It massively simplifies their life.
Okay, that makes sense. One-stop shopping.
Then there's demand consolidation. They
No.
gather up the demand from all those thousands of fragmented workshops. This makes it efficient for the big manufacturers to actually sell into these markets. Otherwise, it'd be too costly for suppliers to reach everyone directly.
Right, they create a manageable channel for the suppliers, too.
Precisely. But maybe the most critical piece is logistics and availability. Think about it. Your car breaks down, you need it fixed now, right?
Absolutely. You can't wait a week for a part.
Exactly. Intercars has this sophisticated logistics setup that ensures super high product availability and really rapid delivery, often multiple times a day to the workshop.
Multiple times a day. Wow.
And that speed is critical for the garages. It affects their repair times, their efficiency, and ultimately their customer satisfaction. It's a huge competitive edge for them and for Intercars.
Okay. Aggregation, consolidation, logistics, anything else?
Yes, one more key thing. Technical support and training. They don't just sling parts. They actually help their workshop customers. They provide technical support, training on new car technologies, software tools.
So they're helping the independent garages stay competitive.
Exactly. Helping them compete against, say, the main dealer networks. It builds loyalty. It makes the whole independent sector stronger.
So this all adds up to them being this one-stop shop you mentioned.
Pretty much. Their main revenue, maybe 90%, comes from wholesale trade of parts and accessories. And that huge portfolio, the 5 million SKUs, covers basically every type of vehicle and repair need.
Is it all just car parts or?
Mostly, but it's diversified.
Yeah.
You've got the core passenger vehicle, PV, segment. But then there's commercial vehicles, CV, trucks, vans. And they're actually the #1 player in the EU for truck parts. That's a big deal.
Number one in truck parts. Okay.
Yep. Plus, they do a lot in tires, which is a big recurring business. And ancillary products, things like batteries, oils, lubricants, garage equipment. Even specialty segments like motorcycle parts and tuning stuff.
So that diversification helps protect them, I guess.
Absolutely. It creates resilience. They're not relying on just one category. If one area slows down, others might pick up the slack.
And where are they actually selling all this? Is it mainly Poland?
Historically, yeah. Poland was the lion's share, maybe around 61% of sales. But the real growth engine, especially recently, has been their international expansion.
Okay. Where are they expanding?
All across Europe, really. They're now in 19 European markets, plus exporting globally to over 30 countries. This big international push is what's been driving that strong double-digit revenue growth we've seen.
How do they manage such rapid expansion? Is it all company-owned branches?
Mostly, no. A key part of their strategy is this franchise-based distribution model. They partner with local entrepreneurs who manage the individual branches.
Ah, franchises. So that lets them grow faster with less capital.
Exactly. It's capital efficient. It leverages local market knowledge, local entrepreneurial drive. It allows for really rapid scaling into new territories without Intercars having to fund every single new location themselves.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though. That franchise model, it sounds like a superpower, right? Fast, efficient growth. But does it have a downside? A kryptonite, maybe?
You've hit on a really critical point. It is powerful, but yes, there's complexity. Their success becomes heavily dependent on the health, performance, and crucially, the loyalty of those franchisees.
Right. If franchisees aren't happy or aren't doing well,
it directly impacts Intercar's distribution. And this is becoming more relevant because competition is heating up, especially back in Poland.
How so?
Well, there's Auto Partner SA, another Polish company growing really fast. And reports suggest they're using maybe more favorable terms or relationships with their franchisees to gain share right in Intercar's backyard.
So a direct challenge on the home turf, potentially exploiting that franchise relationship.
Potentially, yes. It highlights a strategic challenge. Can Intercar's keep its franchisees happy, supported, and loyal, especially when competitors are actively trying to woo them away? It's definitely a balancing act.
That makes perfect sense. Okay, so we know who Intercars is, how they operate, this franchise model. But what about the wider market? What's the sea they're swimming in? Is it a growing market? Stable?
Right. The context is key.
Yeah.
The European automotive aftermarket, the sea, as you put it, is generally vast, mature, and importantly, very resilient.
Resilient how?
Well, projections put it at around $110 billion by 2030. The growth isn't explosive, maybe 2.1% to 2.3% compound annual growth rate, CAGR, from 2024. So steady, not spectacular.
Okay, stable growth, but why resilient?
It comes down to its defensive characteristics. Think about it. Car maintenance isn't really optional, is it? If your car breaks, you generally have to fix it. It's non-discretionary spending for most people and businesses.
True. Can't really put off fixing your brakes.
Exactly. And the demand isn't driven so much by new car sales, but by the sheer number of vehicles already on the road, the vehicle park, and crucially, how old those vehicles are.
Ah, the age of the car.
Yes. And this creates a fascinating countercyclical buffer. During economic downturns, what do people do? They often delay buying a new car, right?
Yeah, they hold on to their current one longer.
Precisely. Which means the average age of cars on the road goes up, and older cars. They simply need more repairs and more parts. So, ironically, a slump in new car sales can actually boost demand for companies like Intercars.
Interesting. So bad times for car makers can be good times for the aftermarket.
To an extent, yes. It provides a level of stability that many other industries don't have.
So what are the main things driving this market forward, besides that resilience?
The single biggest driver is that aging vehicle park. Older cars need more work, period. And modern cars, while more complex, are also lasting longer. People are keeping them for more years, which is a long-term structural tailwind for the aftermarket. More older cars equals more potential repairs over the vehicle's lifetime.
Okay, aging cars is number one. What else?
The other big one is the digital revolution. Digitalization and e-commerce are transforming this industry, just like everywhere else.
How is e-commerce playing out for car parts?
It's growing incredibly fast in Europe. Forecasts suggest like an 11.9% CAGR, hitting over $100 billion by 2034. It's huge.
And that affects Intercars how? B2B, B2C.
Both. On the B2B side, business-to-business workshops are increasingly using online platforms to find parts, check stock, place orders. It's just more efficient for them.
Makes sense. Less time on the phone, more time fixing cars.
Exactly. And on the B2C side, business-to-consumer people are drawn to the convenience and price transparency of buying parts online, maybe for DIY jobs or accessories.
Who's dominating that online space currently?
Right now, it's mostly third-party retailers. They apparently hold over 95% of the online market in 2024. So, for traditional distributors like Intercars, investing heavily in their own online platforms is absolutely crucial to compete.
Got it. Any other major factors shaping the market?
Yeah, the regulatory environment is quite important in Europe, specifically right-to-repair laws.
Right-to-repair. What does that mean here?
Basically, it forces car manufacturers to give independent repair shops access to the same diagnostic info, tools, and spare parts that their own authorized dealers get.
So it levels the playing field.
Exactly. It stops manufacturers from locking out the independent garages. This is vital for sustaining the whole independent aftermarket IAM ecosystem where Intercars operates. It ensures their customers can actually continue to do business.
Okay, that's helpful context, but we have to talk about the elephant in the room, right? The EV transition. Electric vehicles.
Absolutely. The shift to battery electric vehicles, BEVs, is, without doubt, the biggest long-term structural change facing this industry.
How big is it already?
Well, in 2024, BEVs were about 13.6% of new EU car registrations. Significantly, they actually overtook diesel sales for the first time.
Overtook diesel, wow. Okay, so what does that mean for Intercars? Is it a disaster waiting to happen?
It's definitely a dual-edged challenge. On one hand, yes, EVs have far fewer moving parts than traditional internal combustion engine, the ICE cars. No complex engines, no transmissions, no exhaust systems, no fuel systems in the same way.
Right, all the stuff that tends to break or wear out.
Exactly. And those components represent a huge chunk of the current aftermarket parts business. So long term, you'd expect demand for many of Intercars' existing product lines to decline as EVs become more common.
So fewer parts needed overall.
For some types of repairs, yes. But, and this is crucial, the transition is gradual. It's not like flipping a switch.
Why gradual?
Because of the slow turnover of the vehicle park. Cars last a long time. Even if every new car sold tomorrow was electric, there would still be millions of ICE cars on the road needing parts for at least the next decade. Probably much longer.
Okay, so it's not an immediate cliff edge.
No. And importantly, EVs also introduce new revenue streams. They have their own complex, high-value components, massive battery packs, electric motors, sophisticated thermal management systems, tons of electronics.
So different parts, but still parts that will eventually need diagnosing, repairing, replacing.
Precisely. It creates new opportunities for specialized diagnostics, repairs, and component replacements. The challenge for companies like Intercars is adapting their inventory and expertise to service these new types of vehicles.
This is not an immediate cliff, but more of a slow burn, a long-term shift. That makes sense. But for a company like Intercars, built on the traditional internal combustion engine parts business, how do they really mitigate this very real long-term risk of the EV transition?
That is the core strategic question, isn't it? The main concern isn't really an immediate collapse of their business. As we said, ICE cars will be around for ages.
Right.
The risk is more subtle. It's a long-duration risk that starts impacting perception and valuation long before it hits the cash flow significantly.
How do you mean?
Financial markets look ahead. If the market starts seeing Intercars purely as a legacy, ICE-dependent business, its valuation multiple could get compressed. Investors might start demanding a discount for that perceived future risk, even if current profits are strong. That's valuation risk.
Okay, so it's about managing market perception.
Largely, yes. The key mitigation is for Intercars management to develop and very clearly articulate a credible strategy for the EV aftermarket.
They need to show they have a plan.
Exactly. Show how they'll adapt their inventory, their logistics, their training programs for EV parts and repairs. They need to demonstrate a path to becoming as dominant in the EV aftermarket as they are in the ICE world. Without that clear story, the market might just start to discount their future.
Makes sense. Okay, so now we understand the market dynamics, the EV challenge. Let's zoom back in on Intercars. Who are they actually competing against day to day? It sounds like a tough space.
Oh, it is. While it's fragmented overall, there are some very big fish in this pond. Intercars is up against global giants, strong regional players, and some really feisty local competitors.
Like who? Who are the main rivals?
Well, the biggest player in Europe is probably LKQ Corporation. They're US-based, listed on NASDAQ, but their LKQ Europe division is huge over here.
How did they get so big in Europe?
Mainly through acquisitions. They bought up lots of regional distributors. They have immense scale, a massive product range, including recycled parts, which is interesting, and a truly pan-European footprint. They're a formidable competitor.
Okay, LKQ is number one. Who else?
Then you've got Parts Holding Europe, or PHE. They're big in Western Europe, especially under the auto distribution brand. Think France, Spain, Italy, Benelux. That's their stronghold. They're owned by the Dieteren Group now.
Right, strong in Western Europe. What about closer to Intercar's home base?
That's where Auto Partner SA comes in. Also Polish, also listed in Warsaw. They're smaller than Intercars overall, but their growth in Poland has been described as explosive.
Explosive.
Yeah, very rapid growth. And as we touched on, they seem to be competing very aggressively, potentially using different tactics with franchisees. They're seen as a direct and growing threat, especially on Intercar's home turf.
Okay, so a key domestic rival. Anyone else significant?
Sure, there are others. Genuine Parts Company, GPC, operates here through Alliance Automotive Group Europe. And Menkiko Group is strong up in the Nordic region. So, yeah, plenty of competition.
So, with all these big players, how does Intercars maintain its position? What's their moat, their competitive advantage?
They've definitely built some strong defenses.
Yeah.
Several key things give them an edge.
Such a mess.
First, pure economies of scale. Being one of the biggest buyers in Europe gives them massive bargaining power with those 500 suppliers. They can negotiate better prices, better terms, which they can pass on or use to boost their own margins. Size matters here.
Okay, buying power. What else?
Probably their most durable advantage is logistical excellence and network density. It's really hard and expensive for others to copy. They have cutting-edge central warehouses, like the big one in Zakroczym, Poland.
The European Logistics Center, right?
That's the one. But crucially, they combine that central power with a dense network of local branches. This means they can hold huge inventory locally near the workshops.
And that enables the fast delivery you mentioned.
Exactly. Multiple deliveries per day. For a garage, that speed and reliability is gold. It's a massive service differentiator and builds huge customer loyalty. It's very hard for a smaller player to match that logistical capability.
Okay. Scale, logistics, anything else?
The breadth of product portfolio. Back to those 5 million SKUs. Being a genuine one-stop shop is powerful. Workshops save time and hassle sourcing everything from one place. It keeps customers sticky.
So scale, logistics, and range. That combination seems pretty powerful.
It is. And it's led to that dominant market position. #1 in CEE, #2 overall in the European independent aftermarket, #1 in EU truck parts.
And are they still growing faster than these competitors?
Recent data suggests yes. In 2024, Intercars grew sales by 13.6%. That significantly outpaced LKQ Europe's 1.6%, GPC Europe's 6.7%, and Mirko's 7.8%.
Yeah.
So on a consolidated basis, they seem to be gaining share.
But you mentioned a potential vulnerability in Poland.
Right. That's the nuance. While the overall picture looks strong, driven by international expansion, there are these persistent reports that Auto Partner is chipping away at their share in Poland.
And why is that particularly worrying?
Because Poland has always been their cash cow market. It's where they've historically made the strong profits that funded all that international growth. If their core market starts to weaken significantly, it could really undermine their long-term ability to invest and compete aggressively elsewhere. It's definitely something to watch closely.
That's a really clear picture of their competitive standing. Dominant, growing, but facing some specific domestic heat. Okay, let's shift gears to the financials. Impressive growth, market leadership. Does that translate into strong profits and, importantly, cash flow? Especially with all this expansion in inventory.
Ah, the financials. This is where things get really interesting and maybe a bit paradoxical. Looking at the last 5 years, say 2019 to 2023, you see this absolutely stellar top-line growth.
Yeah, you mentioned double-digit growth.
Phenomenal growth, actually. Consolidated revenue went from about PLN 8.8 billion to over PLN 18 billion. That's a compound annual growth rate of nearly 20%.
But, wow, 20% a year? That's huge.
It really is. Driven by gaining share and that aggressive foreign expansion, they're consistently growing much, much faster than the underlying market rate of maybe 2, 3%.
Okay, top line looks great. What about profitability? Margins?
Their gross margin has been fairly stable, usually fluctuating between 29% and 31%, but it is sensitive to things like currency movements. For instance, when the Polish zloty strengthened against the euro in early 2023, it actually shaved about 0.6 percentage points off their gross margin.
Ah, the currency risk we talked about.
Exactly. It introduces volatility. Now, their EBITDA margin, earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization, a good measure of operational profitability that actually expanded nicely for a while, went from 5.3% in 2019 up to a peak of 8.5% in 2021.
That's a healthy improvement.
It was, driven by scale benefits. But it's come down since then, settling around 6.8% in 2023.
Why the decline from the peak?
A few factors. Persistent cost inflation, materials, energy, wages, big investments in logistics, which cost money up front, and likely increased competitive pressure, limiting how much they can raise prices.
Okay, so margins peaked but are still decent. How about returns on capital? Are they making good money on their investments?
Returns like return on equity, ROE, and return on invested capital, ROIC, also peaked around 2021. They've moderated since, but were still healthy in 2023, ROE at 16.4%, ROIC at 9.9%. That suggests they're still earning more than their cost of capital, which is good. But the downward trend is noticeable.
All right. So far, it sounds pretty good. Strong growth, decent profitability. What's the paradox you mentioned?
The paradox lies in the cash flow. This is the real crucial bit. Intercar's business model is incredibly working capital intensive.
Meaning
it requires a huge amount of cash tied up in short-term assets to operate. Primarily that massive inventory we keep talking about. To offer 5 million parts with fast delivery, they have to hold enormous stocks. Plus, they have money tied up in receivables, what their workshop customers owe them.
Okay, so lots of cash needed just to run the day-to-day operation.
Exactly. And this is putting a real strain on their cash flow. Look at their cash conversion cycle, CCC.
Yeah.
How long it takes to turn inventory into cash. It's been getting longer. Went from 120 days in 2019 up to 131 days in 2023.
Longer? Why?
Mostly because their days inventory outstanding, DIO, has increased. Basically, their inventory is growing faster than their sales, where it's taking longer to sell the inventory they have.
And that ties up even more cash.
Precisely. And the impact is stark. Despite the impressive revenue and earnings growth, their operating cash flow has often been low, sometimes even negative, because so much cash is being absorbed by this growing working capital need.
Low or negative operating cash flow, that sounds problematic.
It is a challenge. And when you add in their capital expenditures, CapEx, the money they're spending on those new warehouses, automation, technology, the result is consistently negative free cash flow, FCF, in recent years.
Negative free cash flow. So after all investments, they're actually burning cash.
In recent years, yes. For example, FCF was negative PLN 129 million in 2023. This means their growth isn't self-funding.
So how are they funding this growth and investment?
They have a funding gap, and they've been bridging it primarily with debt. Their growth is essentially dependent on borrowing money or having continuous access to external capital.
That sounds like a significant risk. Growth depends on debt availability.
It is a key financial risk. If credit markets tighten or if their own financial health makes lenders nervous, it could really put the brakes on their expansion plans. They're walking a bit of a tightrope financially. Growth rich, but cash poor, as you could say.
That's a really clear explanation of the financial picture. The strong top-line growth is exciting, but that consistently negative free cash flow and the reliance on debt definitely stand out. So given those financial dynamics, how are they allocating their capital? Are they truly investing for the future to solve these issues, or are they just, I don't know, trying to stay afloat?
That's a fair question, and it links directly to their strategy. Looking at their capital allocation, especially from 2022 to 2024, the clear priority has been reinvestment for growth. They're plowing money back into the business to sustain that rapid expansion.
Reinvesting where specifically?
Two main areas, logistics and warehouse automation and digital transformation. Shareholder returns while there have definitely taken a backseat for now.
Okay, tell me about the logistics investments. Is this about fixing that inventory issue?
It's certainly aimed at managing it better and improving efficiency. They're pouring money into modernizing their operational backbone. That flagship European logistics center is getting equipped with advanced robotics, better control systems,
robots in the warehouse.
Yeah, things like automated picking and sorting. It's not just fancy tech. It's about increasing throughput, getting more parts out faster, and reducing costs. They've already seen small gains, like using slightly less cardboard per order. These investments are vital to handle the sheer scale and complexity, especially with e-commerce growing, and to support those super fast delivery promises.
So, attacking the efficiency side of the inventory challenge, what about the digital side?
Hand in hand with logistics, they're doing a major digital transformation. They recognize their older IT systems weren't up to scratch for the future. So they're building things like a new cloud-native inventory management platform.
Cloud-native, what does that mean practically?
It means using modern, flexible technologies. They mentioned things like Elasticsearch, Docker, Kubernetes, allowing for real-time inventory tracking across their massive network, handling huge amounts of data much more effectively, reducing errors and delays. It's about getting smarter with data.
And other digital investments.
They're also building a core data platform. Think of it as a central brain for all their data, using something called a Lambda architecture, which lets them process information very quickly for both immediate operational needs and longer-term analysis. This provides the foundation for future stuff like predictive analytics, maybe predicting which customers might leave, or forecasting demand better.
So using data to get smarter about inventory and customers makes sense.
Right, trying to move from just reacting to proactively managing that complexity.
Okay, lots of investment and growth. What about shareholders? Are they getting anything back? You mentioned dividends took a backseat.
They do have a formal dividend policy, aiming to potentially pay out up to 60% of consolidated net profit between 2023-2025.
Yeah.
But the key word is may.
Ah, so it's not guaranteed.
Exactly. In practice, the actual payout ratio has been low, leading to a pretty modest dividend yield, recently around, 0.25%. It clearly shows their strategic choice. Prioritize funding, growth initiatives, logistics, digital over large immediate cash returns to shareholders. It's a reinvestment story.
Okay, and all this investment plus the working capital needs. It's funded by debt, you said. How's their debt situation looking?
Well, this heavy investment cycle has meant increased reliance on debt. Their key leverage ratio, net debt to EBITDA, was sitting around 2.7x in early 2025.
Is 2.7x high?
It's not excessively high for a company this size, but it's definitely something to monitor closely, especially given the negative free cash flow. Their ability to manage their debt covenants, the promises they make to lenders, and maintain access to credit is absolutely critical for their strategy to work. It's manageable for now, but needs watching.
It sounds like they're making some smart, forward-looking investments, but it's clear there's a tightrope walk with that negative free cash flow. Beyond their internal strategy, every company faces external challenges. What kind of headwinds has IndraCars been navigating recently, say, over the last couple of years? How do those broader market forces impact a business built on, well, keeping cars running?
That's a crucial point. Even a resilient industry like the aftermarket isn't immune to external shocks. And yeah, the last few years have thrown quite a bit at IndraCars in the sector.
Like what specifically?
Well, the big one, impacting everyone, has been the macroeconomic squeeze from inflation and cost pressures. Persistently high inflation across Europe hit them hard.
How? Rising costs.
Exactly. Rising costs for everything, the parts they buy, energy for their warehouses, transportation, labor.
Yeah.
It increases their procurement costs and their operating expenses, SG&A.
Can't they just pass those costs on?
To some extent, yes. But remember that intense competition we talked about. It limits their pricing power. They might have to absorb some of those cost increases themselves to stay competitive, which then squeezes their margins.
Okay, inflation pressure. What else?
Then there were the geopolitical ripples from the Russia-Ukraine conflict. Being based in Poland, that hit close to home. It caused disruptions in supplies of certain raw materials coming from the region, things like palladium for catalysts, neon gas for chips.
Adding to supply chain headaches.
Exactly. It exacerbated the post-pandemic bottlenecks. Plus, it disrupted some actual vehicle production in nearby countries like Czechia and Slovakia, which has knock-on effects for the parts supply chain down the line.
Got it. Any other major headwinds?
Currency fluctuations are a constant factor for them. They earn a lot of revenue in euros, but report in Polish zloty. So when the zloty strengthens against the euro, like it did in early 2023,
their euro earnings are worth fewer zloty.
Precisely. It directly hit their reported gross margin, causing volatility in their earnings. It's an external factor they can hedge against to some extent, but it's always there.
Makes sense. What about the overall economy? You said the market is defensive, but is it totally immune?
Not totally immune, no. Broader economic sentiment and vehicle usage trends still matter. If there are serious recession fears or rising interest rates make people feel poorer, they might cut back on driving.
Less driving means less wear and tear.
Right. People might put off non-essential maintenance, like cosmetic stuff or preventative work, if they're worried about money. So while essential repairs will still happen, a deep downturn could still dampen short-term demand.
And finally, just the sheer complexity of their operation.
Yeah, the inherent supply chain and inventory management complexity is an ongoing challenge. Managing 5 million parts across 19 countries. It's just immense. Even small inefficiencies, like maybe using the wrong size box for an e-commerce order, add up across millions of shipments. It's why those investments in logistics and automation are so critical. They have to get more efficient to manage this scale.
That's a comprehensive look at the obstacles, puts their resilience into perspective, but also highlights the pressures. Despite all that inflation, geopolitics, inventory headaches, are there still significant opportunities for Intercars to grow and maybe even strengthen its position? Where do they go from here?
Oh, absolutely. Despite the headwinds, there are still very significant growth avenues open to them. Their strategy seems focused on consolidating their leadership and building out this digital ecosystem.
Consolidation? How does that work?
Well, the European aftermarket is still very fragmented. Lots of smaller independent distributors out there. For a large, efficient, well-capitalized player like Intercars, there's a huge opportunity to gain market share from these smaller players.
How? Just by being bigger and better?
Essentially, yes. Leveraging their scale, their buying power, that superior product availability and logistics network, they can often offer better service or prices than smaller competitors who might struggle with rising costs and complexity. It's a natural consolidation trend where the big players tend to get bigger.
Okay. Gaining share from smaller rivals, what about new initiatives?
A massive focus is on their e-commerce and digital ecosystem. Those investments aren't just about internal efficiency. They're about locking in customers and creating new value.
You mentioned their e-catalog before.
Right, the Intercars e-catalog. This is their core B2B platform. Apparently, over 180,000 mechanics use it every month, and it drives more than half their total turnover already.
So it's critical for their main business.
Absolutely. It integrates vehicle data, repair info, seamless ordering. Constantly improving this platform is key to keeping their professional workshop customers happy and loyal. It makes their job easier.
And the other platform, Moto Integrator.
Yes, Moto Integrator. This is more B2C, or maybe B2B2C. It's essentially a marketplace connecting car owners who need repairs with the workshops in Intercars network.
Ah, so Intercars helps find customers for their customers.
Exactly. For drivers, it's a way to find a vetted local garage. For the workshops, it's a lead generation tool. And for Intercars, it creates this virtuous cycle. They drive business to the workshops become more loyal, and they buy more parts from Intercars. It reinforces their whole position.
That's quite clever, building an ecosystem. Any other big growth areas?
Definitely. They can unlock new value in commercial vehicles and through M&A. We know they're already hashtag one in EU truck parts. The commercial vehicle CV market is attractive.
Why is that?
Different demand drivers, more tied to economic activity, fleet usage, and potentially higher margins on some of those specialized truck components. Focusing more on trucks, buses, trailers is a clear path for profitable growth.
And M&A, mergers and acquisitions.
Yeah, while they've focused on organic growth recently, that fragmented market is ripe for consolidation. They could potentially do strategic M&A, maybe smaller tuck-in acquisitions to enter new countries faster, particularly in Western Europe, or to buy specific technology or product expertise. Their size and public listing give them the potential firepower to be a consolidator if the right deals come along.
That's a robust set of opportunities, from market share gains to digital platforms and potential M&A. Paints a picture of a company with a clear plan. Okay, let's bring it all together. Given the strengths, the challenges like cash flow, the opportunities, how does the stock market actually value Intercars? Does the share price reflect all this?
That's the million, or maybe billion zloty question. The valuation picture for Intercars is quite interesting. You have this company with strong growth, clear market leadership, but it trades at valuation multiples that look, well, somewhat modest compared to its history and some peers.
Modest? What does that suggest?
It often suggests the market might be pricing in some of those risks we've been discussing. You know, the working capital intensity, the negative free cash flow, the currency exposure, maybe the long-term EV transition uncertainty.
Can you give us some numbers? How does it compare?
Sure. Looking at relative valuation, its price to earnings, PE ratio, is around 11.1x. That's below its own 10-year average of about 13x, and it looks quite favorable compared to the average for European retail distributors, which is nearer 16x. It's also lower than a peer like Dieteren Group at nearly 19x. So based on earnings, it doesn't look particularly expensive.
Okay, PE looks reasonable. What about other metrics?
The EV/EBITDA ratio, enterprise value to EBITDA, is around 8.7x. That's generally seen as pretty reasonable for a leading distributor like this, and it's broadly in line with Dieteren Group at 8.9x. Again, suggests a solid but maybe not premium valuation.
All right, so relative valuation seems okay. What about yields? Are shareholders getting cash back?
This is where the picture changes dramatically. The dividend yield is tiny, almost negligible, around 0.25% or 0.26%. As we discussed, that reflects their choice to reinvest earnings for growth, not pay them out. So definitely not attractive for income investors.
Okay, low dividend. What about the free cash flow yield?
And here's the big one. The free cash flow, FCF yield, is currently negative. This is a really significant point for valuation. It means that after accounting for all the investments needed to run and grow the business, there's actually no cash left over for shareholders.
This negative FCF yield sounds like a big red flag. What would change that? What's the catalyst that would make the market look at that differently and potentially re-rate their valuation?
You've absolutely nailed it. That is the single most important financial catalyst. A clear, demonstrated path towards sustainable, positive free cash flow generation. That would be huge.
Why is positive FCF so crucial here?
Because it would signal to the market that their impressive growth is finally becoming self-funding. It would show they're getting a handle on that working capital intensity, that they're generating enough cash internally to cover investments, and that their reliance on external debt is shrinking. It fundamentally de-risks the financial profile and makes the company much more attractive. That's the key to potentially unlocking a higher valuation.
So watch the cash flow. Got it. Despite that FCF issue, what do analysts and big investors think?
Well, the analyst view seemed generally constructive, more optimistic perhaps. The consensus 12-month price target as of early 2025 was around PLN 2664, which was a decent premium to the share price at the time. That suggests the sell side sees value, likely banking on continued earnings growth and eventually that improvement in cash conversion.
And who owns the stock? Any big names?
Yes, there's strong institutional backing, especially from major Polish pension funds. Allianz OFE, Nationale Nederlanden OFE, Generali OFE, OFE, PGUO. They all hold significant stakes, like over 5% each, some over 10%.
What does that institutional ownership tell us?
It provides stability to the stock. And it implies these large professional domestic investors have confidence in the long-term strategy and the governance of the company. So all the immediate cash flow is a concern. The smart money, or at least the big local money, seems to be taking a longer-term positive view.
We've covered a lot of ground. Before we wrap up, let's explicitly talk about the downside again. Every investment has risks. What are the absolute key things investors or observers need to watch out for with InnerCars, the main potential pitfalls?
Absolutely crucial to keep the risks front and center. We can group them maybe into operational, market, financial, and competitive risks.
Okay, start with operational.
The biggest operational hurdle is definitely inventory management. It's inherent to their business. But managing 5 million SKUs is just incredibly complex. It exposes them constantly to risks like obsolescence, parts becoming outdated, high carrying costs, potential write-downs. And as we've hammered home, it's the main driver of that negative FCF. It's a massive operational and financial challenge rolled into one.
Right. Inventory is number one. What else operationally?
There's some supplier concentration risk. While they have 500 suppliers, a major disruption with a key supplier for a really important product line could hurt sales and customer satisfaction. It is standard distribution risk, but still relevant.
And their logistics network. You said it's an advantage, but is it also a risk?
It can be. That highly efficient centralized logistics network, especially the main hub, is great when it works, but it's also a potential single point of failure, a major issue there, a fire, a big IT failure, prolonged labor disruption, could severely impact their ability to serve the entire network. Centralization creates efficiency, but also concentrates risk.
Okay, operational risks noted. What about broader market shifts?
Yeah, economic cycles, yes, the aftermarket is defensive, but a really deep, prolonged recession can still hurt. If people significantly cut back on driving, demand will fall, even for some essential parts.
And the big one?
The big one long-term is technological disruption, specifically the EV transition. We've discussed it, but it bears repeating. As EVs take over, demand for many traditional ICE parts will decline. If Intercars doesn't successfully pivot to capture the EV service and repair market, it poses a fundamental threat to their long-term future.
A slow-moving but potentially huge risk. What about financial vulnerabilities?
Currency exposure is always there. The PL and ER fluctuations directly impact their reported margins and earnings, adding volatility.
And the cash flow issue again?
Yes. The working capital intensity and cash flow challenge is a core financial vulnerability. That negative FCF makes them dependent on external financing, mainly debt. If credit gets tight or expensive, it could really restrict their growth. It's a major dependency.
Finally, competitive pressures.
Intense competition could lead to margin compression. Aggressive rivals, like AutoPartner in Poland, could force price wars, eroding profitability.
And the franchisees?
Right. Franchise relationship strain. If those relationships sour, perhaps due to disputes over profit sharing or competitors offering better deals, it could seriously weaken their main route to market. Keeping franchisees happy and loyal is critical.
That's a clear roadmap of the risks, not just what they do well, but what could potentially derail them. Okay, one last area. Let's talk about the team driving this vehicle. Who's actually at the wheel? Is the management experienced? How solid is the governance ensuring they stay on course?
Really important piece, the people. And Intercars seems quite solid here. You've got an experienced leadership team, significant insider ownership, and what looks like a robust governance structure.
Tell me about the management.
The management board is full of executives with deep roots in the European auto aftermarket. The CEO, Maciej Oleksowicz, is part of the founding family, been with the company since 2000. He's key for IT strategy, which is vital now. And critically, he holds a huge stake, over 26% through an investment vehicle. That strongly aligns his interests with shareholders.
Okay, CEO is heavily invested. Yeah. Who else?
Krzysztof Soszewski, the vice president, also there since 2000. He handles strategy, foreign subsidiaries, was involved in the IPO back in 2004, provides continuity. And the CFO, Peter Zamora, joined in 2013 from KPMG, brings strong financial expertise, crucial for managing finances during this rapid growth phase. They demonstrably scaled the business and seem focused on the right strategic things. Now, logistics, digital.
And who oversees them? The board.
Yes, there's a supervisory board chaired by co-founder Andrzej Olesiowski, who also has a significant stake, around 9%. Importantly, the board includes several independent members with diverse expertise. People like Radov Sokudua, Camila Spark, Sofia Jick.
Why are independent members important?
They provide objective oversight and scrutiny. This is particularly crucial on the audit committee, which monitors financial reporting, internal controls, risk management. Having an independent chair there, Radov Sokudua, adds a vital layer of checks and balances, especially given those financial complexities we discussed.
So experience management, independent oversight. What about the overall ownership?
It's an interesting mix. You have that strong founder-led alignment, the CEO and co-founder owning big chunks, meaning they care deeply about long-term value. But you also have that institutional discipline from the big Polish pension funds holding large stakes.
So founder drive plus institutional caution.
Kind of. The institutions are likely pushing for good governance, disciplined capital spending, and eventually sustainable returns. It seems like a potentially healthy balance between entrepreneurial ambition and professional oversight.
That's a reassuring picture of leadership and governance. Okay, final practical point. For our listeners, if you were tracking Intercars SA's journey, keeping a finger on the pulse, what are the absolute essential metrics you'd have on your dashboard? The key performance indicators, the KPIs that really tell the story?
Great question. To really track their progress and risks, I'd focus on a handful of key things.
Okay, number one.
Revenue growth by geography. You absolutely need to see the split. Is Poland holding up? Because that's the profit engine. And is foreign growth still strong? That's the main growth story. Any slowdown in either, especially Poland, is a warning sign.
Got it. Next.
Gross and EBITDA margins. Watch these like a hawk for compression. Is it currency? Is it cost inflation they can't pass on? Is it increased competition forcing prices down? These tell you about their pricing power and operational efficiency.
Makes sense. What about that inventory issue?
Exactly. You need to track inventory turns and the cash conversion cycle, CCC. These are probably the most vital operational metrics right now. Are inventory turns improving, meaning DIO is falling? Is the CCC getting shorter? Any improvement here signals they're managing their biggest capital investment inventory more effectively.
And linked to that?
Free cash flow, FCF generation.
Mm-hmm.
This is the big one financially. Is it turning positive? Is it becoming sustainably positive? That's the single most important financial catalyst. It shows the growth is becoming self-funding and the model is working financially.
Okay, cash flow is king. What about the digital side?
Track digital platform adoption and sales penetration. How many mechanics are actively using the e-catalog? What percentage of sales goes through it? And for Moto Integrator, are workshops signing up? Is it driving traffic? This shows if those big digital investments are actually paying off and building that ecosystem.
One more.
Keep an eye on the leverage ratio, net debt EBITDA. Just make sure the debt level stays manageable. If it creeps up consistently above, say, 3.0x without FCF improving, that's a definite amber or red flag regarding financial risk.
Perfect. That gives us a clear dashboard. Revenue split, margins, inventory, CCC, FCF, digital adoption, and debt.
Those should give you a really good ongoing picture.
What a deep dive. We've really taken InnerCars apart, haven't we? It's clear they're this dominant force, growing fast in a resilient market, truly an engine of the European aftermarket. They're expanding, investing heavily in logistics, in digital. Seems like the right moves for the future.
But yeah, there are those significant counterpoints.
Yeah.
The structural challenge from EVs long term, and that really persistent puzzle around working capital and negative free cash flow right now. It's a definite balancing act.
Absolutely. Balancing exciting digital opportunities against very real domestic competition and those financial pressures.
It's a complex picture.
So here's a final thought to leave you with. InnerCars' future isn't just about selling more car parts. It's really about navigating perhaps the biggest transformation in automotive history, the shift to electric and digital, while simultaneously optimizing every single turn of its incredibly complex physical supply chain.
Can they do it? Can a company built on the internal combustion engine successfully transform itself into the ultimate digital logistics hub for the entirely different vehicles of tomorrow?
That, I think, is the real test ahead for InnerCars.
It certainly is.
We really hope this deep dive has given you a clear, comprehensive understanding of InnerCars SA and this fascinating, often hidden world of automotive parts distribution. What does this analysis mean to you for the wider auto industry? Or maybe just how you view complex distribution businesses in general?
Lots to think about.
Definitely. Keep digging, keep learning, and we'll see you on the next deep dive.